Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 174 for January 5th, 2010. Is 10 inches enough? MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by the new voice-activated sync, featuring hands-free calling, music and podcast search, and turn-by-turn navigation, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRide.com. And by GoToMeeting. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. Make your next meeting a GoToMeeting instead. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly. We're going to cover the latest Mac news here, ladies and gentlemen, with some great Mac people, starting with, in studio with me, Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com, pixelcorps.tv for the podcasts.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, Alex. Good to see you. Always nice to have you in studio. Also with us from beautiful Massachusetts, where it's still legal to get married to anything you want. Mr. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hey, Andy.
We are the founders and the birthplace and the cradle of democracy. Our Constitution is the model upon which the United States Constitution and the World Constitution was fine, written by none less than John Adams. Therefore, we are God's authority on all moral issues. Hi, nice to be here.
Woohoo! Woohoo! And I'm really pleased to get a name that any Mac fan will know very well, John Gruber of DaringFireball.net. He's from Philadelphia, where it's always sunny.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's good to have you, John Gruber. Thanks for being here.
It actually is sunny today.
Are you in Philadelphia?
I am in Philadelphia, Philadelphia.
Wow. I was born in New York,
People say they're from Philadelphia, and they usually mean, like, you know, northeast of Philadelphia or southwest of Philadelphia. Like, I say I'm from Pittsburgh, but I'm not from Pittsburgh.
It's rampant with Philadelphia, and I've never been able to figure out why that is. Like, people who are, you know, half an hour drive away will say they're from Philadelphia.
Yeah, people Hatboro, Horsham, and they're from Philadelphia.
Yeah, I never got that. No, I'm right in Philadelphia.
I think I'm actually on a radio station in Hatboro, Horsham.
There's a great breakfast gig. That's all I got. There's a great breakfast place in Hatboro, Horsham. That's all I
got to
say.
Big story today. Actually, there's quite a few big stories today, but the story that's actually ongoing is Nexus One, Google's phone. Google had the announcement today, I guess, to preempt CES, or maybe they didn't want to go to CES, but for whatever reason, if you go to google.com/phone, there is a phone there, a Google phone. Did we learn anything? Andy, you've been following the press conference, right? Anything coming out of it?
Not really. Anybody who's been keeping their ear to the ground to Engadget and the sites that have gotten their hands on one, then there's no real news on the hardware. The only real news is that Verizon will have their own in about a month or two, or excuse me, sometime in the next couple of months of 2010. Otherwise, the really big news from the whole press conference is that it is going to be available out of contract, is going to be sold directly through Google. You go to a page on Google, you have the option of either buying it outright for about $550, in which case you just pop your own, you can take your SIM card out of your iPhone and put it into the Google Android phone, excuse me, the Nexus phone, it'll work just fine. Or you can buy it at a discount if you're going to sign up for a 1 or 2 year contract, and they anticipate that most of the major carriers are going to be covered. So this is going to be a great switcher phone for lots of people because they can simply complete the contract they are on right now. And not have to do a buyout, not have to worry about, well, what happens if I'm getting great coverage with the provider I have right now. What happens if I switch to T-Mobile or somebody else?
It's interesting that they have Verizon on here as a radio button, but not checkable. It says Spring 2010, but then it says Droid does right below it. it's like, well, but you could still buy a Droid. And then right below it, Vodafone, the European carrier. Now, that's interesting. That means that HTC will make more than one handset, because the one that Engadget has and has seen only had T-Mobile frequencies. So there'll have to be one with a chip for Verizon and presumably Vodafone.
It is curious, too. I mean, and it's only a little bit over 1 year since the original, you know, G1 HTC Android phone. And in just that 1 year, the one manufacturer, HTC alone, I think worldwide they've had like 7 or 8 Android phones. I mean, it's just in contrast with Apple and the iPhone, where it's one phone per year. And some years, you can't even tell them apart.
Yeah, and also Google has made a point that this is going to be just the first in a series of phones that are going to be sold by the Google brand. So clearly, clearly Google is going to be a serious challenger to iPhone now. Not necessarily because they have a better phone, but because they are going to
have better carriers.
They're the only people who are in the position of selling it to anybody who has money, and through any hardware manufacturer that wants to make one.
Somebody asked me, well, what's going to be the story of this announcement? And to me, the only question was, is Google going to take a shot at cell phone carriers, or is Google going to take a shot at the iPhone? And it sounds like the latter, not the former.
Exactly. There's a lot of speculation that why does Google need to sign up with any carriers? They're going to have their own wireless network. They have bought their own frequencies, and you're going to be on the worldwide global Google network that costs you nothing. It's going to be all supported via ads, and it turns out to be a very, very lowbrow sort of release. I was sort of expecting with Android 2.1, this is the first Android 2.1 OS device, that we'd see a lot of new software, a lot of big tweaks to the user interface. And honestly, if you are an existing Droid user, for instance, you won't see very much to really lust after with the Nexus. The only tweak that they made that I like that I've seen so far is that they used to have a very, very complicated system of just overlaying drawers that you pull one drawer down to get notifications and then another drawer up to get, it's like a game of war with playing cards. So now they've changed that a little bit. Now the application drawer is now sort of an overlay layer. It's a little tweak. I'm a little bit disappointed because I think they do need to start working on refining the user interface. But again, it's a step forward anyway.
I think in the same way that the iTunes is really the killer app that makes the iPhone part much of what it is, I think that Google Voice is the thing that really makes a lot of these things. If they really wrap that tightly, I know for me it's tempting, and I'm a pretty big iPhone user, is that I love, we're getting ready to do more and more around Google Voice, and being able to kind of unhook from my phone number and be able to kind of virtualize that is something that I'm really interested in.
Yeah, and on top of everything else, they've added voice input as a standard input device. So anything that accepts any field, any page that requires text input can now be inputted via voice.
Oh, does it have a voice? Does it have recognition everywhere?
Voice recognition everywhere. If you want to tweet via voice, you can do that.
Oh, wow.
Do you know, Andy, if the voice recognition requires online access? Like, because with like the Google search app for iPhone, it does voice recognition for your search query, but you've got to be online because it sends it to the quote cloud, and that's where it transcribes your voice and comes back. Or are they doing it all on the phone?
I know that the SDK does have support for onboard voice recognition. Huh. It does require a lot of muscle from the server. Mostly it's but the software that's on the server is mostly understanding the context of a request. It can figure out that it thinks that you've said barley bucket dodge, but only when it contacts the Nexus saying, what the hell do you think he means? You can say, how about he means date and bus schedule? Oh, okay. Now that I think of it, that makes a lot more sense. Certainly I think the voice recognition will get a lot better with an internet connection without. I don't actually have one in my hands now. When I was testing the Droid, one of the first things I was testing was, well, what happens if I turn off all the radios and then try to operate anything via voice? Right. And some things work. Mostly, though, it is a feature for searching Google via voice. So that still remains to be seen for me.
I have one question that maybe is obvious, but I know that the one thing that I've been really thinking about with the iPhone that I'd want to see in the new next version, there's been rumors that we're going to see a new OS for the iPhone. Is it seems like when you're working on your iPhone and we have all these problems with being dropped, I'm in San Francisco, my office is in San Francisco, and you get dropped all the time off AT&T, is that you want the phone, rather than using Skype, because I use Skype in the office from my iPhone, you want just the phone to know, hey, I'm on Wi-Fi, why don't I just VoIP this? Like Apple could almost build a routing to do that. Now, I think it's very hard to do for Apple, but I think it's not, it's much less hard for Google to do it. because they've already got an infrastructure to allow that to happen, where it just decides, oh, I'm in Wi-Fi now, I'm gonna connect through Wi-Fi rather than my 3G, and then I'm not using my minutes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and I've thought about the same thing too, because the times that I have the most problems with, and Philadelphia is far better AT&T story than New York or San Francisco, but it's not good. But the times of the day when my wife and I have the most problems is weekdays during the day. I mean, that's the busy time. But that's also the time when I'm most likely to be in the house with a decent Wi-Fi network right here. So some kind of auto detection of, hey, I'm on a known Wi-Fi network. Why not put the call over VoIP as a, you know, somehow make it happen, magical technology.
Well, here's a question. You know, now, T-Mobile might allow that, but Verizon sure is not going to allow that. So do
right,
you have a different...
You'd be using it instead of the minutes, because you always charge for minutes on weekdays, and that's when I would need it the most.
Right. So are we going to have different builds of... I don't think we're going to have different builds of Google. I think this is a Google reference phone. They call it the Google Experience.
Well, they have a lot less leverage. These phone manufacturers have a lot less leverage when you don't...
Yeah, you want the phone?
You're buying the phone separately.
Well, you can't, but I have to say, on a CDMA network like Verizon, I don't know how they're going to do that, because you have to have Verizon activate it. It's not a SIM card.
It's got to be a second phone, right?
There are chips that can do both. There are chips that we had that I had that I was correct.
Verizon has SIMs.
No, there are chips that there are phone chips.
No. In fact, I was mistaken. According to Ken Shepherdson, he's given us a link to the Google page. It says the Nexus One's antenna supports 4 GSM radio frequencies. 850, 900, 1800, 1900, and 3 3G bands, 1, 4, and 8. It doesn't say anything about CDMA, so I don't know how they're going to do a Verizon phone.
Were they listing Verizon as one of their... I thought it was...
They say
Sprint
2010,
T-Mobile.
So they're going to have to make a special Verizon version that's CDMA that won't use a SIM chip, that will require Verizon activation. I don't think they can sell an unlocked phone that's Verizon compatible, is what I'm saying.
Well, right.
The technology exists to do it. I don't know whether they're doing it. There are cell chips that can cross all of, you know, almost all the...
But how do you activate it? You have to call Verizon, and they say, well, what are you talking about?
Well, yeah, it could be. You could build...
The only way you could activate it is if you had a friendly, independent retailer who was willing to... I've seen that happen. They can activate CDMA phones because there's a code. But generally, I would guess, my strong guess, that the Verizon version of this, which will be a separate version, will require you to buy it through Verizon.
Which is actually...
There will
one
not
the,
be an unlocked Verizon
version. By the way, this is one of the other... The arguments against having a Verizon account is that when you go overseas...
You can't take it.
You know.
They make one or two international Verizon phones. Maybe this will be that some sort of weird hybrid.
Well, Verizon does have coverage in a lot of different world countries. I was talking to Verizon about this issue when I was reviewing the Droid, and they told me I was using my Asia trip, my MacMania 9 trip, as an example. And she said, well, in the three cities that you were in Korea, China, and Japan, we would have been able to give you coverage through a local partner.
I was actually using a Verizon Storm in Brazil when I was there.
Yeah. Well, as I said, there are international phones also from Verizon. They are GSM hybrid, right. GSM CDMA. But I'm going to guess. I don't see it being a unlocked phone on the Verizon network, which is interesting. I mean, really, this is, to answer my initial question, this is not a shot across the bows of the cell carriers by any means.
No. Well, I think that the shot across the bow could come. This little hybrid, you know, could turn into a lot more. If you figured out how to switch from, you know, from your cell network to your Wi-Fi to your, you know, so on and so forth.
They're not going to do... I can guarantee you they're not going to allow that on a Verizon phone.
I don't know if they're going to not allow it on a Verizon phone. I think that the issue, you know, for me, I think that AT&T could get take a lot of heat off of their system if they allowed the Wi-Fi connection, you know, through that system.
I did talk to a major wireless carrier about that, and they said that in addition to any commercial reasons why they would not like to do that, which he did not want to even discuss, he said that they have teams of lawyers that have to really look into, because they're defined by the government, you know, as a telecommunications company, are they legally allowed to put calls across a Wi-Fi network? Or would they have to simply say that there are different rules for calls that get routed across Wi-Fi and different stricter rules that get routed across their traditional network?
But I guess I would say it's not really AT&T, is it? It's Apple just putting a switch in there that makes it happen.
Well, it would have to be. It's a much more complicated situation than a simple technical switch that has to go in. For instance, what happens if there's a 911 call Have they sort of made a promise to the user that because I put a call through via Wi-Fi, I didn't tell you that you don't have coverage in this area. Now there's a 911. Are we now required to make sure that we can turn on your GPS to get a location to 911 dispatch? It was one of those conversations that started with me making furious notes so that I could start to refer some of these things to my legal experts,
right.
And then my eyes getting a little bit blurry and my wanting to get a soda. but it did lead me to the conclusion that it was one of those interesting concepts where, yes, we have the technology, yes, the software is very, very easy, but because in 1911 new regulations were put in to control what can be done with telegraph operators, there's a legacy law that would make things not difficult to do, but it would be something that has to be looked at before it can go through.
So if I click, will this phone work with my SIM? It says, we are working hard to provide Nexus One phones optimized for the Verizon network. Please stay tuned. The Nexus One for Verizon will not be a GSM device.
Right.
So it will not be compatible with T-Mobile, AT&T, or other GSM networks. The 3G band used by AT&T and Rogers, not supported.
Right, but it does work on Edge.
It works on AT&T. Edge on AT&T, but not 3G.
Right.
So you could use, but that's really not a very compelling pitch for an iPhone user who wants to switch.
No, not really.
Not the pitch to switch. So again, I don't even know if it's a shot against the iPhone so much as just. What is Google? We'll wrap this up in a second. But what is Google's motivation? What are they getting out of doing this? Why do they do this, Alex?
I think it gives them. I think it. You know, there was a great article, and I don't remember where I saw it. We were talking about it on TWIM yesterday, but it. You know, Google looks at everything as, can we dominate it or commoditize it? You know, that's what their argument was: is that everything that they do, everything that they add, either is going to dominate a market or it's going to commoditize the market, and it's going to continue to allow them to do ads. I think location-based communication is going to be a massive thing for the next decade, and I think that Google has to have. I think Google's learning. I think Google has learned some of Apple's little tricks, which is that when you own the hardware, you have to have some control over the hardware to keep on pushing the technology in the direction that you want.
Ooh, look, you can get it personalized.
Yeah, that's one of the things that disappointed me, because the sample hardware that they've been sending out with their employees as their eat their own dog food test base had a QC code on the back of it. Just as it had the Google Android, you know, the logo, a little mascot holding up like a big QC code. And that at first I thought to me, that is a brilliant and simple idea. If you silkscreen a unique QC code for every single phone, you have the ability to simply hold up that phone to a kiosk device, to hold that phone up to like a check-in device and instantly identify yourself by your phone without any need for Bluetooth, without any need to like transmit any cookies, any logins. You know, if we're going to have a one-pass system for the real world, that's a brilliant way to do it. I was kind of disappointed to see these sample phones that were shown front and back during the keynote say that, no, that was just a funny thing that we decided to do.
Because it would even work with a dead battery.
Oh, exactly. Wow.
Yep.
Right? I mean, which is, you know, a legitimate problem with all smartphones.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the battery life exactly is going to be on this.
So,
but
John,
you know,
why does Google do this? Given what they've done, what's the point?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of that it's the one thing I take away from this is that they're definitely emphasizing hardware variety. I mean, especially the fact that this has come so close on the heels of
the
Motorola Droid,
yeah,
which was the premier Android handset in the world, but only for what now, 5 weeks?
I mean, right.
And now it's different because it's a different carrier, and you know, and there are differences, like the big one being the hardware keyboard. But that to me is almost exactly the point, though, is I guess Google's doing this right on the heels of Droid, it's a way of emphasizing we've got a variety of hardware.
Well, but can't that become their Achilles heel?
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out, because I think for developers, it's definitely a hassle.
I have no interest. I mean, someone asked me about us, because we're developing a bunch of internal apps for the iPhone, and I don't know if we're ever going to release anywhere. We're just using them for stuff we need on our own, and I'm not interested in developing for the Droid, because I'm like, there's too many interfaces. I just, you know, I'd have to issue everybody a phone you know, to the phone that I want to develop for, rather than just if I develop it on the iPhone, I know that I can just, you know, everybody in the office has got an iPhone, so I don't have to worry about it.
One other thing before we get off it that I have thought about too is when I seem to recall when Android was initially announced, maybe it was a year before they actually released a phone, but when Google first said, look, we're going to do this thing called Android, it's going to be an open source operating system for mobile phones, I remember at the debut, they talked about all sorts of different form factors. I mean, like, what do you call the cheap phones? Feature phones, you know, with tiny little screens that you'd be able to use Android on them and on this and on that. And I think one thing that's come out of this, the way it's shaken out in the last 2 or 3 years, is that the iPhone has sort of defined the shape of a modern phone.
Yep.
I mean, and you can argue about whether, you know, things like the hardware keyboard on the Palm Pre and the Pixie and the Droid, but fundamentally it's the biggest touch screen you can fit on the device and do as much as you can with touch UI gestures.
You're really right. It looks like an iPhone, doesn't it? Yep.
Right. Compared to everything that came before the iPhone, everything now is like sort of fundamentally iPhone shape.
The form factor is now set in stone, or at least until the tablet comes out.
Well, and have you seen the tab? I'm sorry. If I
don't start the tablet yet.
Okay.
Zip it. We're going to get to the tablet in just a bit. And John wrote a great piece on Daring Fireball about his predictions. In fact, the imperative that the tablet presents. And I think we're going to talk about that. One last question. Anybody here order a Nexus One? Okay, just checking.
Thinking about it, though.
I ordered one. Oh, John, now would you switch from an iPhone?
Well, I would like to switch, you know, at least for a month. You know, and I guess worst case scenario, you know, if I don't really like it or think it's worth keeping, hopefully it'll have some kind of resale value. My other hope, though, is maybe with all these free ones that Google's given out to Google employees, maybe
it's not too late to get a free one. Yeah.
Right. Or maybe I could buy one from someone at Google or on eBay or something.
Oh,
I mean, presumably they were told to keep them secret until
today.
You
want to buy my Droid? Because I just bought a Nexus One.
I mean, that is one difference between – that's one big difference between Google and Apple is Google seems pretty liberal with the free Google phones.
It's true.
Like everybody at the event today apparently got one. All the press who were there, everybody gets – like imagine if Apple did that.
Yeah. No kidding. You'd have a happy press corps, that's for sure. Apple doesn't need to do that. Hey, there is another difference. Look how much we knew and how accurate our information was about the Nexus One compared to what we know about anything Apple does.
Yeah.
Well, that's because that's what happens when you basically when you sort of force feed fire hose the actual production hardware into the field. That's not a secret. That's more of a we want to find out. We're making up our slide deck. We want to know what everybody's complaining about so we can tell them they're full of dung.
Well, that's one way to do it, but it is a completely different attitude and strategy. Yeah. And I'd have to say, if you're saying open versus proprietary, it is a more open way of approaching the whole thing.
But you have a lot of guesswork that goes on. I mean, there's a lot of guesswork for both of them. I mean, both of them are creating revolutionary, you know, hardware right now.
And so, I'm just glad there's frickin' competition. That's all. And absolutely. Palm really died on the vine. You know, Palm did not do what it needed to do. And thank goodness there's somebody.
They're
not dead yet, but boy, this doesn't. It's not boding well for the WebOS.
Crowded up too much. I think that definitely they are becoming the two leaders. I mean, I think BlackBerry has.
Yeah, I'd be worried if I were a RIM.
I think
it's got government and corporate inertia.
Yeah, but
just
I mean,
like Windows.
Those big blackouts are kind of a scary thing for them. But I think that they have some inertia, but I don't think that they have any momentum.
If this were the Google phone show, which it's not, I would then now ask the question, what does Google need to do to make that Nexus One a credible BlackBerry killer? But that will save for this week in Google, because that's a very interesting topic. You know, what do you do to put BlackBerry out of it? What do you put RIM out of its misery? But I do want to get to the Slate, or whatever the hell it's called. That's a crappy name. Can't be the iSlate.
I vote no on that. I'll go on the record.
Yeah, me too. Crappy name.
And but, the only evidence of it is that Apple registered a trademark for it and a domain name for it. I mean, I can't help but think that Apple's got 50 i-something domain names and trademarks.
They've got it so you can't, basically. We're going to get to that topic and more. I'm so glad John Gruber's here from DaringFireball.net, really one of the most incisive observers of the Apple scene. He's just, you got to read it. He's just right on every time. And that's really the reason I wanted to. No, I just love your stuff. And acerbic. And sometimes, yes, cranky. But we like that.
Definitely.
We like that in a commentator. That's all. Most of the people on here are cranky from time to time. Alex Lindsay for the Pixel Corps also here. And, of course, my good buddy, Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Scott Bourne out for the day, but he'll be back next week. Do want to mention our friends at GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is, of course, the software from Citrix that helps you travel less, get more done. And as you watch and listen to our live coverage of CES this week, you know that in many ways you can be there in Vegas without having to travel all the way there.
We make it automatic.
Yeah, that's what GoToMeeting's all about. You could be there at your meetings without having to travel to them. The internet, what a concept. Saves you time, saves you money, helps you get more done for sales presentations, for product demos. We use them to collaborate all the time. In fact, we use it on the show for people to show screenshots. I've used it to even do things like rehearse presentations with somebody who's in Chicago. Training sessions, it goes on and on. It's easy. It's secure, 128-bit SSL, completely secure. No configuration of the router, the firewall. It just does NAT traversal automatically. And at $49 a month, for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want, there is no better deal out there. All of our coverage of CES 2010 is brought to you by my good friends at Citrix. We thank them so much for their support. We're about to head to CES tomorrow for our 4 days of hell. I wish we could do the whole thing via GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting.com/MacBreak. That's the place to go to get your free trial for the next 30 days. No cost to you. You could see just what it can do for you. GoToMeeting.com/MacBreak. Please try it free on me. I think you'll love it. So if you read Daring Fireball, you probably read a really great piece by John Gruber on what Apple has to do to make this tablet succeed. In fact, great minds think alike, because Andy Anatko in the Chicago Sun-Times writing a very similar piece. And I'd like to say, well, I'd like to say that as soon as I read Gruber's piece, I too was amazingly coincidentally of the same exact opinion. So, John, you want to summarize what you're thinking Apple has to do to make the new tablet a success?
I think the core question, and it's just one simple question, is if somebody already has a MacBook or a Windows laptop, but a laptop computer, and they already have an iPhone, then where is the use case for the tablet? And, you know, people say things like, oh, well, you use it on the couch or you use it in bed.
Steve Jobs very famously said, I don't want to make a device that's just for people using it in the bathroom.
Right. But, you know, people already.
Who wants to admit that, though?
Well, apparently Jobs.
It's just funny because I saw somebody who argued. I read one response that argued that nobody actually uses their laptop on the couch. I actually read that on my laptop on my couch.
Neener, neener, neener. Oh, I use a laptop all the time.
That's where I use it, like. Well, 80% of the time I'm in the
I don't watch TV room. Without a laptop, period.
TV by itself is a waste of time.
Crap.
So I, you know, my answer to the question, and it's just, you know, hypothesis, is not based on any kind of information, but the only there has to be an answer to this question, I believe, for Apple to go to market with the device. And I think that the answer is that it is ultimately something that people would buy instead of a MacBook.
Ah. So you give really two choices. It could be instead of an iPhone or instead of a MacBook. You could go down or you could go up.
Yeah, but I don't think that it really – I don't think anything can really replace an iPhone that doesn't fit in your pocket.
Right.
You know,
it's too big for an iPhone.
Yeah, right.
The big deal has always been Apple does not like duplication. They're very, very cognizant of the products they already have in the product line and making sure that they're not going to sell something that will give – that they're not going to put something in the product line that will give them an alternative to something they already have.
But it's your opinion, John, that this well, see, now you're saying something slightly different, Andy, because John's saying it has to replace the MacBook because there is no niche. There's no place in between an iPhone and a laptop. There's nothing there.
That's not what I was getting from John's piece.
Oh, okay. So John, correct me. Did I misunderstand?
No, I don't think – I just think that ultimately, though, it's something that you – it'll be so – I think it's got to be so full-featured, though, that you could replace a MacBook with it, depending on what you need. Like, it could be the computer you take with you on the road.
Here's what I took from your piece, and my thinking that I cribbed completely from, in my opinion, from you, which is there isn't, and Andy, you can argue with me in a second, there isn't a niche in between the iPhone and the laptop. Nobody wants something that's too big to fit in my breast pocket that isn't as full-featured as my laptop. I've got kind of the bases covered. So what I really want is something that is kind of big, maybe bigger than we thought originally, you know, kind of maybe 10 inches, maybe verging on the size of a 13-inch, but just a beautiful screen, just a gorgeous screen that when I sit it down, notice, by the way, that Apple now, by default, ships Bluetooth mouse with touch capabilities and a little bitty Bluetooth keyboard that really is way too small for the 27. It'd kind of be just the right size for a 10-inch screen. So maybe you sit down, you put your tablet on the desk, now it's your computer. You get up, you don't disconnect anything, you just take it with you, and it's a rich media device that also has complete computing capability. Is that kind of what you're thinking, John?
I guess. I mean, I don't have the – I mean, this is why I write about the stuff that other people make rather than making my own amazing stuff, is I don't have the imagination to, to know – to think exactly what these things could be. I sort of I mean, I'm a writer, so I type. I mean, I'm really, really fussy about keyboards. I use a 17-year-old Apple Extended 2 because it's the only one that clicks right for me. Right. So, I mean, that's not – being a professional writer is not a typical use case. So I would love it if it worked with a Bluetooth hardware keyboard instead of just a touchscreen keyboard. I don't know that, you know, it seems like, boy, there's an awful lot of people who've been asking them to do that with the iPhone and they haven't done it yet either. So I don't know if it, you know, but it certainly seems more along the lines of the sort of scope that I'm thinking that this thing could do.
Right, Andy, is there a niche, Andy, that between the laptop and the iPhone that this fills? Because that's what it sounds like you're saying. It needs to be that.
Well, I don't think it's a niche so much as Apple can create a brand new device that doesn't make sense right now because we haven't seen it yet. But as soon as think about the iPod, think about the iPhone, it became so much more immediately to most of its users than simply a smartphone, a phone that can get email and web. It became more of a window into a different a new set of realities for them. The operative line for my Sun Times piece is that a lot of people are sort of identifying this supposed tablet as an ebook reader, as a media reader, as a movie viewer. And the operative line, I think, is that it's not the book, it's the eyeglasses you use to see the book with. That it's going to be, I left for a second just to fetch my usual netbook, which is an Asus EPC, is the Seashell model, which is still my go-to device. Now, take the keyboard off of that. This is a very nice little device.
Yeah. Now, with a smaller bezel.
Well, forget about design for a second. This is something that I take with me a lot of places that I have no interest of using an actual laptop in. Now, this the only way you can improve upon this is to make it simpler and to make it more a better device for different contexts. If you give me something that's just this, and this is about a 10-inch screen, so we're looking at, if the rumors are true, this is pretty much what you can see in this window right now is probably what we'll be looking at in terms of an Apple tablet. If you give me a device that will let me keep up with all my news, like when I'm eating my out for lunch, I'm eating my burrito, will let me read all my books, the ones that will also let me have third-party apps so that I can add new features to it, I wouldn't necessarily need the ability to have Microsoft Works or Microsoft Office on it. I wouldn't even necessarily need to have a full word processor on it. But the ability to simply open documents that I'm working on that are on my .Mac account or just transferred from the cloud would be a very, very big deal. The ability to pull up an on-screen keyboard and do quick edits would also be a very big deal. The ability to actually have a real keyboard via Bluetooth, if that's the way I want to work with this one mode, would also be a very big deal. If this were a device that were significantly less expensive than a MacBook, to make it not so much to not to cannibalize sales, but to make it very, very clear to the purchaser that this is not a notebook, this is something totally different, they could really have something here, especially if, and this is another area which the rumors are sort of flying fast and furious around, if Apple is being very, very careful to get all kinds of different media providers on board, if this is not just a book, this is not just a movie player, this allows you to give a very, very nice context for all the digital content and all the digital information and entertainment that's out there, including your own documents. That's something I could spend $500 or $600 for. That would not be an iPhone. It wouldn't be a MacBook, but it would be something very, very interesting.
You agree, Alex?
Well, I think that I do agree. I think that there is a niche there that, you know, as someone who owns a couple laptops and an iPhone, that I could use something where I could take it with me when I want to go light, which is kind of what I do with the iPhone now, and I feel like it's not quite enough. But I think that the most revolutionary thing about this is getting past the arm length. You know, right now with my iPhone, and you know, that's about as far out as I can go before it's uncomfortable to watch. Being able to set it down in the kitchen to watch how to make a mixed drink or how to make chicken cordon bleu or how to, you know, being able to set it up, you know, on my dining room table and be able to watch whatever, you know, some kind of show in the news or whatever while I'm having breakfast, being able to, you know, it's this thing that you end up carrying around. It's also this interface. I mean, I think that when you look at the educational possibilities, when you're talking about schools, I mean, this is what schools issue to kids, not laptops. I strongly feel that this is your device.
Textbook and your...
It's the textbook. It's what you take your tests on. It's how you interact when you're in class. It's what you, you know, it is the, I just really think this is, you know, a big device.
But I also came away with, John, is that you believe, and I think you're right on this, that Apple has to do something much more than a Me Too product. They have to really break some ground here.
Yeah, it's got to stand out in certain ways. And
it can't be a netbook. It can't be a netbook without a keyboard.
And it can't just be an iPod Touch with a bigger screen. I mean, it just can't. I mean, and like, you know, we were talking even pre-show. I mean, a big thing with the iPhone, the whole iPhone interface is very much, it's not abstract software. It's very much related to the physical size of the device. That the whole thing is conceived with this idea that it's on a 3.5-inch piece of hardware that you can fit in one hand and effectively do anything on it with holding the device in one hand. I mean, anybody who walks around a city with their iPhone, you don't even think about it really. I mean, it's typing, if you get real good at thumb typing, isn't that easy with one hand. But for most of the things you do on your iPhone, like looking things up and on a map or calling somebody or, you know, web surfing, you can do the whole thing. You can go from the lower left corner to the top right corner with your one thumb while holding it in one hand. Why in the world would you use an interface, a software interface designed for corner to corner, one hand use on a 3.5-inch screen? Why would that you ever blow that up to fit on a 10-inch screen? It would, you know, it would be goofy.
Let's see.
And if it's only a 5 or 6 inch screen, which I, you know, it seems like all the rumors in the Wall Street Journal yesterday said 10-inch screen.
It's got to be big.
I mean,
it's got to be.
Everybody
big.
Is sort of circling in on 10 inches, yeah. Which seems like a better, a much more reasonable size for reading. 5 inches, 6 inches. If you just take a piece of cardboard or something and make like a 5 or 6 inch screen, it's interesting, but it's not that much bigger than an iPhone, really, to make reading or watching movies or something a more a better experience. It's not bigger enough.
I think it's also going to cause a revolution in clothing.
Big pockets. You've said that before. People are going to have Captain Kangaroo pockets now because they have to carry their...
baby.
Well, the thing is that
I've been printing this for years.
I don't know if I talked about this before.
Andy already carries his netbook in his rear.
I bought a pair of pants at Eddie Bauer.
Rear pocket.
I'm sorry, did I say rear pocket?
Yes, thank you.
I bought a
significant difference.
I bought a pair of pants at Eddie Bauer with a zip pocket on one side that is not close to the size of the iPhone. It is exactly the size of the iPhone.
No, I'm sure people do that.
That pocket was made for an iPhone. Yeah. You know, and the thing is in the same way, a slightly rearranged cargo pant pocket will fit one of these things in there. And I think that's what we're going to... I know.
What about a detachable keyboard? What about making it more like a notebook? What about saying it's an $800-$900 portable notebook with a detachable keyboard, or maybe it's...
I don't think I need a detachable keyboard. I think I want to have... I do want to have a Bluetooth access, though. That would be really difficult for me if I didn't have...
Bluetooth for music, for phone, for what?
I'm sorry, Bluetooth for the...
keyboard. For the keyboard. Yeah, yeah.
I think the big thing to keep your mind on is when Cortez reached the New World, he had his men set fire to a ship. This left them very well motivated. If Apple says here's a keyboard, here's a USB port, it will accept any USB keyboard. That will encourage everybody to say, oh, so we will never even try to think of this as anything other than a netbook. Whereas if they simply say, there's a keyboard profile if you want to. Well, no, we're not going to give you a kickstand or anything to make it really, really easy. But you know, if you want to bring your own, that's perfectly fine.
So we sell one. Apple needs to burn the ships.
Apple needs to. In fact, Apple is going to say that this is a brand new thing. they're going to have, if they have a success with this, it will be by diffusing any argument from the very, very get-go of why would I want to buy this instead of a MacBook? Well, this isn't a MacBook. Well, why would I want to buy this instead of an iPod Touch? Well, this isn't an iPod Touch. This is a brand new thing.
Well, let's get crazy then. What do we do? I know, John, you're right, and I put myself in the same shoes. If I could outthink Steve Jobs, I wouldn't be sitting on this ball.
Right.
But what? Let's go crazy. Let's get out of the box. What do you do to distinguish this? So far, I haven't heard anything that, frankly, is that different.
I think that the thing that distinguishes this this
the
hardware
content deals?
iTunes.
It's the content
well,
deals.
Well, it's not just the content deals.
The chain.
It is the fact that, I mean, I think that every developer under the sun will jump on this.
But I will be the devil's advocate. If they had been making content deals, surely we would have heard something by now.
I don't think the content deals are as important as the App Store.
So and you I think having the chain and then... Well, they've done that before.
They've done
that before. They did that with TV. They did it with movies. They did it with really iTunes itself.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be massive. Content developers who, you know, because everyone knows that the people who really made out well on the iPhone were the
what if
most
you
of
make a
10
inch screen and you do in fact you did get a deal with Disney and CBS to do television, whatever what they call my TV or whatever they were talking about, $30 a month, and now it's your TV set. Is that good? Is that compelling?
If you
not
can,
for me.
Nope.
If you link it,
yeah,
if you,
not enough.
If I'm
not
able
enough.
To link it to my media center, so I have my Drobo hooked up to my Mac Mini, and that's on my Wi-Fi network, and I'm able to watch everything that I have.
Let's face
on that.
It, that's the Zune HD.
Yeah, but it's not big enough. I'm saying I could have that big screen that I could be, you know, that connects seamlessly.
It's
not
10
inches
big enough.
It's big enough for me. I'd be fine with it.
That is not, by the way, going to be our show title. So just stop thinking it is.
We'll see. Still half hour to go. We've
John Gruber, is 10 inches big enough?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I can't imagine that it would be much bigger than that. I mean, anything bigger. And I've actually done, you know, gone around and like measured physical books and notebooks and like, well, if it was 7 inches, it would be about this big. If it was 10 inches, it would be about this big. I mean, you know, take an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
It would be safe to say John Gruber has measured and says 10 inches is big enough.
So suddenly there's an episode of Are We Being Served?
There you go. No, but it depends on you. I mean, everybody seems to be circling in on periodical publishers, newspapers and magazines, who obviously have had, you know.
And we do know they've talked to the Times, right? We know that much. Times intimated that they had talked to them, that Apple had talked to them.
You know what, though? It was hard to tell, though, if you really look at that without wishful thinking eyeglasses. That comment from Times, you know, editor-in-chief or whatever they call him, Bill Keller, it was hard to tell whether that was actually like he knew that they were doing something or whether he was just saying it like, look, everybody knows that they're doing it. You know, the same way that we're talking about it, that we know that Apple's doing it, but we don't know that Apple's doing this.
Right.
It was very hard to tell whether, you know, his comment. I don't know. And it almost makes me think that it was more like a common knowledge type remark, simply because to be the editor-in-chief of the Times, you kind of have to be pretty good at keeping secrets. I mean, so if he was really that informed, I don't know that he would have let that slip casually.
Right.
I mean, with, you know, sources.
So it's safe to say they probably don't have any content deals.
I don't know.
Anybody that works with Apple on a
is
real deal
is locked in a room right now.
Well,
with Windows.
If you know anything about what Apple's doing, you generally won't say it. You know, that's usually right. The rule of thumb.
Also, I can't really talk about details, but I've heard in several years on several different topics, I've talked to people who have had communications with Apple where Apple wanted to make it very clear. Wanted to send a very clear message to this individual about their future plans without telling them anything about their future plans. Kind of like saying, gosh, that's really, really cool how you're dumping raw sewage into the backyard like that. I'm wondering if that's going to be a good idea 2 years from now when the EPA is the new administration comes in. You know, it's not a case of saying we're making plans to introduce this device on this quarter of this year. Therefore, you want to be in a good position to take advantage of that by exploiting open APIs, XMLizing all your content, moving to a CMS for all of your publication needs. They have a way of saying, interesting how you're using it that way. We think that that's not a great way to go, but good luck with that.
When I mention having conversations with people that talk to Apple that way, I'm talking about developers who've been spoken to about the way they develop their software, people who are very, very close partners who were about to do something, let's say, that would be very, very unfortunate given Apple's future plans. None of them were able to say Apple told me in advance or even hinted in advance that there was going to be specific things done. They simply made a statement to me in private and very, very quietly that made it clear that if I put myself in a position to be here in 2 years, that would work out very, very well.
Remember Condé Nast said they were going to do an e-reader? I mean, a lot of newspapers, Murdoch intimated Hearst they would did, do well, a reader. Hearst was, well, you know.
Hearst made more announcements, so they're not so much.
Condé Nast is Hearst, so it got quiet. So do you think that that's what happened? That maybe some of these guys were moving down that path, and then Apple said, you don't want to do that.
No, not necessarily. I think it's more of a case where they're at a stage where every time I talk to hardware manufacturers and distributors, you can't underestimate what effect this announcement is going to have. Not in that they have specific business plans, so much as they don't know. They're building a spacecraft for a planet they've never been to before. When Apple makes its announcement, then they will know what kind of terrain that. This hardware manufacturer and these content distributors have to navigate, and that will define exactly the sort of products that they're going to create. Not necessarily because they're going to absolutely make it for this device and only this device, but it will define the landscape of digital content distribution and consumption. So,
well, and I think in some ways that draws us back to iTunes. I mean, the thing is
Lala.
Yeah,
is Lala part of this?
I don't know if it's part of
this. What if you had a device that would be the ultimate, like audio, video, text, right? It's all in this device. Then keyboard it's not as important. It's really a consumption device. What if it's just a consumption device? Is that
it's
compelling?
Not for
$800. It's not enough.
Not for $800,
but the
what if it's subsidized?
No, I think it's got to be, at the very least, though, it's got to be consumption plus communication. I mean, that, to me, is the whole secret to when this entire computing racket went mainstream and you know, like when all of our moms got computers and everything. It's when computers became communication devices, and it's, you know, it's Twitter and sharing photos and texting and stuff like that. But there's got to be that type of angle to it.
I think you got Apple has just acquired, by the way, this just came in. Apple has just acquired. Remember, they were in the bidding for AdMob. They didn't get AdMob. They've acquired Quartz, which is an AdMob. Or I'm sorry, Quattro Wireless, which is an AdMob-like wireless advertising company.
They're doing their own maps.
It's not a typical Apple acquisition. So you're thinking now, okay, they want an advertising company. Of course, they see a lot of money being made by AdMob on the iPhone. Maybe they just want a cut of it. Or maybe they want to subsidize something. It's going to have Wi-Fi. But does it have to have 3G?
I don't think so.
I submit that's a problem because I already have... I'm already paying for 3G.
Yeah,
I don't want another $60 a month bill.
Yeah. No, and you know, and you could say, well, it will just tether with your iPhone. But guess what? If you live in the United States, you still can't tether with your iPhone. So,
AT&T has no interest in allowing anybody.
They said they would allow tethering. Maybe this is a joint announcement.
No, but
AT&T did say they were going to allow tethering.
If AT&T is having trouble with data. And people with this device,
now download
that
Frasier episode. What happens
at that resolution, because it's going to be. My guess is it's probably going to be 960x540. It's probably going to be somewhere close to the resolution that it's going to play back at, and that would be.
What is the minimum res? It could be 480p.
Yeah, 800x4. Well, I think 960x540. I'm guessing
540 is pretty good. 540 is great.
Yeah, but that's video too. I think too. I mean, and assuming that. Publications, newspapers, and magazines are going to be a big part of this. They're going to have to answer the question: why would I buy? You know, why would I subscribe to the New York Times? Just, you know, to use everybody's favorite example, or the, you know, wonderful Chicago Sun-Times. Why would I subscribe to it and pay, presumably, to get it on this tablet instead of just reading the website for free? And I think part of that is going to be that it's going to be a much better experience, bigger pictures. You know, more video integrated with.
What's
with
the minimum resolution you could have for a reader?
I think 960x540 is pretty close to
720.
It.
720.
I don't know. I think for a reader, it's got to be more. I don't know. I tend to think more pixels for reading because I think they're going to want the text to be really, really crisp.
I was talking on the twit with Veronica Belmont, for instance. I said, she's a big Kindle user. I said, what if Apple comes out? Yeah, you have to charge it every night, but it's color. It's more lively. It's got animation. It's got all that rich media that, that John was just talking about. Wouldn't you trade it? She said, no, I really like the crispness, the solidity of the Kindle screen. And I think she's probably not alone on that. So what do you need to do something.
Well, do you like the iPhone crispness?
No, I asked her. Do you read on the iPhone? She said, no.
Okay.
Well, there's so many factors that go into readability, of which pixels per inch is only one part of it. Right. One of the things I desperately don't like about Android is that the simple problem of typography on that screen. I'm convinced that Apple puts a lot of work into making sure that what's the letter spacing for this font that will make this word the most readable at this size on this window, and that really comes across. There are many, many times when I should correct myself. By default, even though the iPhone screen was lower in resolution than the Droid screen, text was almost always much easier to read on the iPhone because they handled the typography that much better. So that's not it. Pixels per inch aren't the only thing. It's not the slam dunk.
Here's another story that might change the complexion here. Apple and Disney, according to Patently Apple, may be working together to develop a video and multimedia on-demand service via MobileMe. Remember, Apple was building all those data centers. The report cites in October 2009, Apple patent enabling a system by which MobileMe members could partially view television or any video content on their iPhone, then switch to Apple TV or Mac or whatever, and then return home, continue viewing, just like the Kindle does that, you know, picks it up. Times says, we'll see this kind of service make a splash at CES this week with Disney's forthcoming Key Chest program debuting there. Of course, Apple and Disney are, you know, basically the same company since Steve is a major shareholder in Disney. That's the problem, is Apple can make deals like this with Disney, but it's hard to make them with anybody else. But that's interesting. I think we're leaning towards a very good content device, text, audio, and video, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
How Again, much if, else does it have to have? Does it have to be, could you have to be able to participate in social media? It has to be a communications device.
I think that I think it would be a huge hit. If it did what the iPhone could do plus access to a keyboard, it'd be a pretty big hit.
That would be enough.
Well,
$800, $700, $600.
If you were able to develop the applications that we're able to see on an iPhone, but had larger real estate and so on and so forth,
that's key too, isn't it? Now, it can't be, and this is another bit of speculation. I know, John, you've written about this. Is it OS 10? Is it iPhone OS? Is it something in between?
And I'm almost certain that it's a third OS. You know,
but then can you you got to make it so the developers can quickly get from one to the other, though, right?
I don't think that that'll be that.
Developers do like the money they make on the iPhone platform,
I would be absolutely shocked if it didn't go into the same biostructure as OS X in the App Store. I'd be very, very shocked if it were not if there weren't a very, very linear path between being an iPhone developer and being a tablet developer. I'm not saying that you could port one application to the other in an afternoon, but I would be very, very shocked if there weren't a very linear process to build upon the experience that you've developed as an iPhone developer.
Custom UI, though, for a larger screen or no?
It'd be foolish if it were just like the iPhone. I don't think that an iPhone interface completely makes sense, particularly given that it's developed for no windows, one screen, and gestures that can be done just with moving your thumb around.
I say very little storage because Hollywood's most afraid of storage.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't know about
no?
that. Yeah. It's 32 is going to have to be the minimum. That's going to be the 4 gig.
All streaming all the time because then you can make content deals.
I still think it's 30. I think it's 32 minimum, 32 to 64. Yep. I think those are the two versions.
And I'm just telling you, I think that these magazines and, you know, I think books are going to be part of it. They're going to take up space. I think that a high quality version you know, Sports Illustrated, or Newsweek or something like that is going to take up, you know, a decent chunk of space.
That actually is an area where Kindle doesn't do very well. It's great in linear novels, but it's terrible for browsing. And something larger with color that was more browsable could really do better. That Times keeps playing with different interfaces on Windows that is more browsable.
I think that what the iPhone really represents, and I think that, you know, when we started making movies, you know, we put cameras in front of stages, you know, and just took a stage you know, just did a stage play in front of a camera.
Right.
We, by the time we got to The Matrix, we had completely changed the way we tell a story.
Right.
You know, in the same way, the Kindle is, we have moved.
It's very linear.
We're shooting the stage.
Yep.
We've moved the experience of reading to an electronic device.
But it's still a book that you turn pages.
The iPhone is the beginning, I think, of the next step. When you start looking at being able to interact with video, being able to have magazine articles with video included.
I think that's what this is. This is a periodical delivery system, not a book delivery system.
When you look at, I don't know who was doing it. Was it the Times or was it Wired or someone was doing a thing where they shot the cover on a Red.
Right.
You know, so there was a still.
Oh, yeah.
But they showed there was a whole video that became the cover. And so the thing is you start doing that, hyperlinks in between, added detail to the article that wasn't included in the linear article. Yeah. All these things are things that we've been, you know, that I think we've been waiting to happen. Like, we thought this was going to be the next thing, but the problem was, even though PDF has made that available since the mid-90s, there hasn't been a device that made it really easy to ingest. And I think this could really be the beginning of that.
Yeah, that's a very famous concept video that was produced by the consulting agency that was working for Time Inc. They did a mock-up of what a digital version of Sports Illustrated would be like on an unspecified tablet-sized color device with very, very good video and touch features. And it really does exemplify everything that you're talking about.
You could do something amazing.
Now, if
Apple didn't have to protect AT&T and its iPhone business, would they build a phone in this or not?
I still
understand that. Well, you know, but if you do, then don't you cannibalize your... Maybe they would.
I don't know. I just don't see what having a phone on a 10-inch device would do. I mean,
I don't think it's a phone.
This is what Dvorak showed us. he had the Newton. Hello? Yeah, I'll be right with you.
Well, but
But what if you have headphone plugged into this and you're sitting here? I mean, people are getting used to the wireless. Well,
I don't ever put my iPhone. I get a headache if I put my iPhone up against my ear for very long. So I don't.
I think Apple's been seeding all these reports that it's dangerous to put your phone next to your head.
I don't.
You look like Alexander Hamilton.
By the way, Skype has announced 720p versions and HD versions.
Wow.
So now put it on a 720p 10-inch. Wi-Fi enabled screen with maybe a 3G module.
I think the only reason that you want 3G is because you want to be able to have access to that
everywhere.
You want data everywhere, yeah. And
3G is an option though, not gonna be required.
It would definitely be an option. I don't think it would definitely be the norm.
Right. And I think there are people like you who would pay for it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think we've got a pretty good picture here. Is this enough, John Gruber, to get people to buy it?
Nah, I think we're still missing something. I mean, assuming that it's, you know, that we're not making fools of ourselves and that it really is coming, you know, later this month or you know, announced later this month and shipping soon, I still think there's something that's missing that they've got. Yeah,
Dick's Flatline says, oh, it's easy. Add home automation. It's an X10 controller.
Turn your lights on and off. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. The basic conclusion of my Sun Times piece is that I think I understand maybe half of it. And I think the other half is going to be the moments where I'm going to like, I get it now.
Isn't it amazing
mostly it's going to be user interface. There's going to be a new user interface on this that I would not have been able to guess at because I'd never seen it before.
It's amazing how we Apple fans ascribe godlike abilities to Johnny Ive and Steve Jobs.
They're good. They really are. I mean, and it's almost like, and I hope I'm not spoiling this for anybody out there who hasn't seen it, but like they do every once in a while with technology the equivalent of like when you were watching a movie like The Sixth Sense and you get to the part, you know, where they reveal it and then all of a sudden the light goes on in your head and you're like, I can't believe I didn't figure that out all along, or The Usual Suspects or something like that.
The aha.
And I just can't help but feel like as I'm watching this tablet rumor thing unfold that there's something, the clues are there and there's something that they're going to reveal and it's going to be like, I can't believe I, you know.
We all not only expect but demand an aha moment out of this, because otherwise it makes no sense.
I think it makes sense. I think with what we've listed, it makes sense.
We've had this argument for a year now because I've been saying, I don't get it. I don't want it.
I was trying to build one. The biggest problem we had with building one, by the way, was just the interface. That was the thing that.
Well, if anybody could do a UI that makes you go, whoa, it's going to be Apple.
And by the way, if this is just a little bit of a rat hole, but the if you want to see a great interview with Jonathan Ives, there's a documentary called Objectified that's kind of floating around on PBS. I think you can get it on
You know what? And they just it just came out yesterday as a rental on iTunes.
It is so great.
Let's all get it.
So great.
Objectify.
Directed by Gary Hustwit, who was the director of the excellent Helvetica documentary.
Love Helvetica. Yeah. I love Helvetica.
Yeah, it's just interviews with great industrial designers.
Oh, so it's not just Johnny.
No. It's a whole group, but it's great to just watch the cogs in his head work as he does the interview. Yeah. And so, but with all of these, it's just talking about industrial design, and I'm afraid I geek out.
If Jonathan Ives did not exist, we would have had to create him.
Yeah. So I'm not sure Tim Apple didn't create him.
Yeah.
That's the reason why we rarely see him is that it takes a puppeteers of seven people. They can never get both the head and the body working at the same time.
It's objectified, F-I-E-D. Yeah. I'm just looking at it right now on iTunes.
And it's now that you can rent it on iTunes, I know that it was previously available. I'm still there on Amazon.
Oh,
via
good.
Right. Netflix or something like that. Like it's now that it's on iTunes, it's rentable on all the major streaming renting services. Oh, really, it's definitely. I second the recommendation. Yeah. It's really really good movie.
Well, we're getting to our picks. Don't waste your picks, kids. I'm gonna pick Objectified.
Lee was obviously very prepared before the show started.
What am I going to pick? Well, you got a minute to think about it. We're going to come back and just.
Well, then I'm going to pick Apple's tablet.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a good question.
I'm going to pick the thing that you guys haven't even heard a rumor about they're coming out with after the tablet.
I can't talk about it because it's sworn secrecy. Yeah, I was going to pick that. So that was a question I saw on Friend Feed or Facebook or somewhere the other day. Yeah, I think Kevin Rose posed it. If you could order right now, whatever it is, sight unseen, without knowing what it is, would you?
Yes.
Andy Anatko.
Sorry, what was the second?
You've been saving up. If you could, I know you have a little.
I was pasting in my pick of the week URL so you could have.
I know you have a piggy bank filled with $700 or $800.
Oh, God.
If you could buy this thing sight unseen today, would you?
If I could have it day of release, I think I would. Not because I'm an Apple fan, but because I know I'm gonna be writing at least $600 worth of stuff about it.
We're not a good test. Let's say you're not Mr. Chicago Sun-Times.
If I'm not Mr. Chicago Sun-Times, no, because I'm not in the sort of financial league where I can afford to gamble $600 on something I've never seen before. I don't even like going to see a movie that I know nothing about if it costs $10.50.
I know what Andy was doing. He was registering iSlateUnloaded.com. I know what
thank
you're
you.
Up to.
Thank you. Now I'm going to have to register it for real because someone's going to try to beat me to it. Another 33. Thank you so much. $33 out of my iSlate envelope. What a hose.
John Gruber, would you order and buy today? Put your money where your mouth is.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Yeah.
Me too.
I would do it.
We'd all do it, except for Andy, who is going to do it anyway.
He knows he'd do it. He has to.
It's an occupational hazard. And I do too.
That's my argument.
Somebody
that's
asked me.
I'm sticking to it.
There's this site, this cookie site called formspring.me. I don't know where it came from, and now I wish I hadn't signed up for it, but people get to ask you questions on this site. Just any question at all. I've had over 1,000 questions now that I have to answer because I said, oh, ask me anything on Twitter. That was stupid. But one of the questions is, do you like Kool-Aid? And I said, only if it's apple flavored, baby. And I have drunk the cup of knowledge.
But the thing is that the way you get people to drink the Kool-Aid is that you keep on producing something that they want. I mean, it's not like I bought the iPhone and then now look at it and go, well,
no,
I thought it
right.
was going to be great, and now it's a piece of crap.
No, you're right. If we had been burned a few times.
Yeah.
Right. It's like once, you know, it's like with James Cameron, where once, you know, you have a couple of
We gave him a chance. That's right.
You know, I would have gone, I haven't seen Avatar yet, but I'm going to. I mean, and I've, you know, been in a black hole, tried to be as spoiler free as possible, but I would have gone to see it, you know, no matter what anybody.
Okay. I'm going to tell you, the aliens are dead, people.
Yeah.
It's a shocker. It's a real twist right at the end there.
The one thing that we should say to get us all back grounded is that, you know, just remember Apple TV. If you had imagined Apple's going to come up with an HD like set top box that will deliver all kinds of media, integrate your iTunes library. We would not have thought oh, so it's just a gray box you plug in your TV that lets you stream music and stuff from you. Really? I bet the next version of the software will be great. No? Really? No. Well, the third version of the software
will
be great.
It's going to get better someday. Yeah. That's a great point, though. And I sort of think, I mean, the four of us are all, you know, willing to go hyperventilation level code red on the tablet speculation. But I think in general, overall, everybody is anticipating this, but I think expectations are very reasonable overall. Like people who's, you know, there's so much speculation that it's just an e-reader or just something. And I think part of that is fueled by Apple TV that, you know, as a very pedestrian, humble, not mind-blowing product that Apple came out with, that you know, that people are sort of, there's a lot of people who I think are saying, yeah, Apple's going to come out with a tablet, but whose expectations I think are Apple TV level rather than iPhone level.
Yeah,
I think though I'm going with iPhone level.
I agree.
iPhone level, iPhone level,
iPhone level,
iPhone level. We're all in agreement. It's got to be.
Well, and one difference, the thing that I think holds Apple TV back more than anything else is that the whole premise of the thing is that you're watching, and not to put YouTube and other sources of user-generated and video podcasts and stuff, not to denigrate them, but primarily it's about watching feature motion pictures from major studios and watching, you know, big-time broadcast TV shows. And so Apple is at the mercy of the sort of content deals that they can get out of major TV and cable networks and the movie studios. And, you know, if you've ever, like, I use my Apple TV all the time and I rent movies there, but I'm sometimes flabbergasted at the movies you can't get on. You could, the world's worst corner video store has a better selection of movies than Apple TV. And that's not Apple's fault. I think it's that, you know, I think that they would publish as many movies as they can get. It's the studios that they're sort of reluctant to let Apple
dominate
video like they do music.
Maybe because they're, you know, the funny thing I always think about that is that I get that they're reluctant to let Apple dominate video the way they dominate music, because when they dominated music, it did so much damage to the music industry, right?
Wrong.
I mean, you know, the thing is, these guys are idiots.
They're idiots.
They want to be protected.
We want to be Hulu.
What they really need to do is be protected from themselves, because they have their heads shoved so far up a dark hole that they have no idea which way is right, left, up, or down.
So isn't it, I think it's an interesting contrast, too, on that. And I think the tablet hypothetically plays into this in terms of what kind of deals Apple can get. Is so you've got the music industry. Let's divide the whole media world in three: music, TV and video, and then third would be print, traditional print. So music's already been iTunesified. Video, the TV and movie people, I think they're looking at Apple and iTunes they sort of like, we don't want that to happen to us. Whereas the print people are saying, we would absolutely love, please, Apple, please do to us what you've done to music.
Well, that's because they're in the same position music was in. They are dying. And so the thing is that Apple...
Because people aren't paying for content.
Right. So the issue that they have is that you know, the video folks are still making some money. The print guys are going out of business. They are, you know, they're like, whatever you throw into the water, we're going to grab onto, because we don't have a choice at this point. That's where the music industry was when Apple threw the preserver.
I'm sure that Rupert Murdoch sees Steve Jobs as a savior. I mean, please help me help me get people to pay for this somehow.
Well, also, it's also an interesting way that Apple seems to have learned that they can make a lot of money by creating a planet in which the state sales tax is 30% and they get to keep all of it. and people who decide to move to that planet realize that if they create products, they just keeping 70% of potentially a lot of money is a very, very good deal for them, given that how efficient the government is at taking money from its citizens. So I think that it could be part of a brand new world inside this device in which it's very, very easy as a content provider to put apps, books, music, anything on it, and Apple will simply say, we don't, you know, we will let you do whatever you want, give us 30 cents and we'll help you promote it, we'll help you sell it, we'll all be very, very fat and happy.
I also think that when you talk about adding value, being able to charge for your content, a device that plays video, adds audio, adds all those things, you can go up to our website, you can go up to the New York Times and read the articles, but you're not going to get the enhanced experience. You're not going to get all the things that we have there. I think that's a great way for them to start adding more value and charging for it.
Well, also it's the idea of you're not getting one micro slice of the New York Times. We will give you the entire New York Times on your device, instantly accessible, easy to get from one place to another.
Is the world ready for a bunch of subscriptions like that? I mean, are people starting to get subscription fatigue?
We used to subscribe. We used to subscribe to all these magazines. I mean, I subscribed to The Economist and Macworld. And
I think Apple might have a bundle price. That's what they were talking about with TV, and I think that would be also a very compelling product.
We poo-poo subscriptions, but how many of us happily pay for a Netflix subscription, though...
I think that you compare it to the apps, like where I think everybody who has an iPhone or an iPod Touch buys... I buy more apps. You know, it's not just the 99-cent price. It's the I don't have to enter my credit card and the expiration date and the secret three-digit thing, which by now is not a secret. It's centralized, right? I mean, I think that's the difference. Where a subscription to 10 magazines through iTunes is going to be a lot easier to manage than 10 separate individual subscriptions in the pre-tablet world.
We're going to be back with more in just a bit. We're talking with John Gruber of DaringFireball.net. Great Apple blog, a must-read for anybody who follows Apple. Andy Notko of the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, CWOB.com, and Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. We're going to CES tomorrow. We're packing everything up right after... Wait a minute. Today, we're packing everything up right after the show. In fact, I think...
I'm getting on the flight.
Later on in the afternoon, there'll only be one camera left. I'm serious. It's going to be a one-camera shoot because everything's getting in a box and going. And starting Wednesday evening... Our first interview is with the CEO of Ford, which I'm very excited about. Starting Wednesday evening, we are going to be on the ground and running and gunning and covering CES in a way that's never been covered before. Colleen has built a remote live rig that lets us broadcast using high-speed 3G and 4G cards anywhere, including a cab, including the fountains at the Bellagio, anywhere. If I happen to take off my clothes and jump in those fountains, you will see it live, ladies and gentlemen. Not much
and
to tune
boys
in
and
for.
Girls, we know what we mean, but when we say it,
whether it's live is another question. We
have a title.
Oh dear, and we we also will be doing the big press events, Showstoppers and Digital Experience, where the press gets to eat, you know, giant jumbo shrimp and drink from chocolate fountains. And while they're regaled by various high paying clientele to show them their products, so we'll show you that. Show you what it's like to be a wine and dine is the last place you can still get wine and dine as a media maven. We'll also be doing live all day coverage Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, including the radio show Twig and Twit, and many of our other shows will be there. I want to thank our friends at Sync for making this all possible. Sync is the new system available exclusively in Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And I know a lot of people have said, where is my third-party, you know, add-on Sync? And I wish they did have such a thing. But no, my friends, you've got to go to your Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury dealer, and you've got to say, I want my Sync. And it is awesome. It's enough, truthfully, to buy a Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury vehicle. We've got the Lincoln MKT is pulling up right outside as we speak. We're going to start packing it up. It's got the great Sync in it. In fact, later this afternoon, we'll be talking via Sync as we go down the road on the way to Vegas. I feel like Hope and Crosby. We're off on the road to Las Vegas. Sync is the hands-free. So we care about the safety of our driver. So he's going to use the Sync to make calls on his mobile phone to find and play music and podcasts, to get turn-by-turn navigation so he doesn't get lost. He can access real-time traffic information so he knows what's going on the road ahead, weather, business listings, ski reports. I hope he's not going skiing. Sports scores, even fantasy league scores. And 911 assist. Should the airbags deploy, we'll know. GPS information sent directly to 911 so you get emergency help as quickly as you need it. Vehicle health reports too. All hands free from Sync. That means you keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, humming along on your way down to Vegas. Sync and Ford are getting 3 honors at CES. 2010, an in-dash computer for Ford's commercial truck and van division won Best of Innovations in the category of in-vehicle accessories. The 2010 Taurus was honored as the official car of CES because of 10 amazing things in the Taurus, including the Sync. Also, Sync was honored in the CES Design and Engineering Awards category of the In-Vehicle Navigation, Telematics, and Intelligent Transportation System for their traffic directions and information application. We're going to know a lot more. There's some new stuff coming down the road, and we'll cover it. As I said, we're talking to the CEO for tomorrow afternoon. SyncMyRide.com. If you want to know more about Sync, there's some great videos there illustrating it. And stay tuned to Twit for the next 5 or 6 days. You're going to learn about Sync and everything new and exciting at CES, thanks to our friends at Sync. And don't forget to go to your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer to test out Ford, Lincoln, Mercury Sync. It's as amazing as I have described it. Trust me. I was driving, I had a little mishap on New Year's Eve. I have a friend, a younger friend, who was doing the splits on the dance floor, and I was a little happy. I wasn't drunk, but I was in a good mood, and I attempted a split.
Yeah.
With exactly the result you would think. Excruciating agony in my left leg.
Ow.
Now, unfortunately, and I'm still limping, and I have no, you know, every time I try to, it's bad. I'm not in a cast, but I should be probably. But there is a side effect I did not anticipate. I cannot shift a clutch pedal. So I'm not driving my car. I can't drive it. So I don't have the Sync. I'm driving the old Lexus because it's automatic, right? I can't do a manual car because I can't shift with my left leg. It's like, it twinges when I press the pedal. Oh. So I miss this. I now really appreciate the Sync. I miss it. Any other quick stories we want to get to? 3 billion served. John says this in his daring fireball piece. Apple has announced the 3 billionth download from the App Store. They didn't, you know, they made such a big deal about the billionth, which was bump.
Yeah.
18 months, 3 billion. Steve Jobs in a press release says, "This is like nothing we've ever seen before." You know, look, as a CEO, I could tell you right now, I have minions who write these. I don't write these. And I have a feeling Steve's minions wrote, quote, "The revolutionary App Store offers iPhone and iPod Touch users an experience unlike anything else available on the other mobile devices. And we see no signs of the competition catching up anytime soon."
I think you'd be very surprised at how carefully those quotes in an Apple PR are. Every single word is obsessed over.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. But I don't think Steve originated any of those words. He might. Yeah, I'm sure he saw them.
I don't know. Again, I've often said that writing about Apple is like being a Kremlinologist from the old Cold War, where you've got truly. To, you know, you get your copy of Pravda over in the Western world, and you start like reading between the lines of the news stories to see what's really going on.
Why is state television airing Alexander Nevsky today? Are they playing?
Right, exactly.
Right. Who's standing next to Khrushchev on the podium? Oh my God! There's been a complete shakeup at the Politburo.
So I can't help but think that on the day, it's before CES, and yes. Apple, you know, traditionally, because of Macworld's previous timing, like to make big announcements before CES. And it's the day they happen to announce the 3 billionth download for mobile phones on the day that Google releases their biggest Android handset to date. And it says...
No signs of the competition catching up anytime soon.
So my bloviating over the top read way too much into 12 words interpretation is that it's Apple's way of saying Android, pshaw.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know, they're in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. And the press release ends with Apple is also spearheading the digital media revolution. Okay, that's an important 6 words right there.
Right. That's new, actually. That's new boilerplate.
Yeah.
It's to be that Apple ignited the personal computer revolution.
They still say that, but at the end, this last sentence is, Apple is spearheading the digital media revolution with its iPod, portable music and video players, and iTunes online store, and has entered the mobile phone market with its revolutionary iPhone. I would read a little into that, too. They're pushing this digital media thing. I'm thinking we're really on track here with our
it's gonna be big.
Content focus for the I suck, whatever it's called.
Oh, and then did you see that there's an iGuide?
What do you mean?
Some people are thinking that, some people think that iGuide is also owned by Apple.
Oh, okay. Let's put Google Goggle-like functionality into this.
Well, but here's the thing is let's put Howcast. Let's put, mm-hmm. you know, what if you have
Not guide to like touristic things, but guide to everything.
Guide to life. What if you have
it's IKEA.
What if you have an iTunes that is like, that basically says, I don't know how to cook this, or I don't know how to change the oil in my Audi, or I don't know how to do whatever.
What if you buy
is.
A bookshelf and you get the little IKEA guys on that screen? It's just the right size. You put it in front of you.
Oh, man.
Maybe a little video, a little flash.
It'd be good for people like me who do that kind of thing.
I have people who do that. You same people who write my press releases.
Exactly.
Dane, put that bookshelf together. That's interesting. Guide. Okay, now I think we were inching into some interesting territory. This is what they tried to do with GarageBand with the music lessons, is try to take that and put it somewhere else. And by the way, $4.99 a pop.
And I got to say, and I do have to say, it would be a lot easier to learn how to play the guitar from a iSlate or whatever they're going to call it than it would be from my computer. Because then I could be sitting anywhere I need to, I don't know how to do this. This gets into that whole matrix, do you know how to fly that helicopter? Not yet. And you're able to grab that. And as you look at that video content going up, and again, a marketplace to do that. I know that when I told Leo that I was going to do a multicam edit for Twit,
I mocked you.
I didn't know how to do it when I said I was going to do it.
Now you tell me.
and you just knew
it was possible.
At 1 o'clock in the morning, when I was banging my head on Final Cut trying to figure out how to sync up these things, I would have paid $50 for a 5-minute video on how to sync three camera tracks. You know, and so
this is the ultimate help application, just with you all the time.
And that becomes, you know, and if Apple's taken, you know, 30% of all of the, and that's a whole market. You know, to be that
we've speculated, and the New York Times gave rise to this speculation with the quote of a unnamed Apple employee who said this UI is not like anything you've ever seen before. We speculate a little bit about that. What do you think, John? Front facing camera and Minority Report style waves. What are we going to be doing?
I honestly don't know. I don't know.
What can you do?
I would guess a front facing camera. I don't know. I don't do a lot of video chat. I mean. So I don't know. How important is the front-facing camera?
I would put it in.
Yeah.
I would definitely put it. It's cheap, and I'd put it in. I don't know if you need a back-facing camera.
I would think so because it's relatively cheap. I would think that you know, and that Apple has this sort of, you know, and it's aesthetically pleasing the way that the whole surface is black, and you can put little things like all the other iPhone sensors, the proximity sensor, et cetera, fit underneath this glossy black surface, and you don't even see it. So I would guess. I mean, like, why not? I don't know, but
I think it's.
But I don't know. There's an awful lot of people who thought there was going to be a front-facing camera on the.
I think it's hard from a real estate perspective to put it on the front of the iPhone. I think it's much easier to put it on the front of an iSlate.
I still think a very narrow bezel, though. I think you want to look. This thing should look like it's a screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then how do you hold it without your thumb covering?
That's what I'm about to say. You need to have toggles, like a paddle sections on the left and the right, just to give you a place to hold it without your thumbs blocking something important.
Shoot.
That's the.
Can I hold it like a waiter, like a tray?
I was trying. I probably did the same thing that Alex was doing, where I actually say, "Well, here's a picture frame on my wall. I'm going to hold this in my hands for a little while and find out where things go." And I'm thinking, "Well, what if the user interface is just two arcs in the lower corners, so within the turning radius of my thumbs?"
We've seen that. So, Microsoft did it. UMPC controls. It was two little arcs, just as you described, left and right, where your thumbs would go. You'd hold the thing like this. Your thumbs would. You know, hold it on the sides. Your thumbs would go there. And in fact, the whole keyboard would pop up left and right thumb.
Yeah. Or if it was just smart enough to know, figure out where you're resting your hand and decide that, you know what, we're going to put a cluster of controls wherever your hand happens to be. And we're going to wait for, you know, that's why I'm saying, I think I can guess at half of it. I think the other half of it, nobody can guess at. Or at least that's what I'm hoping for.
Right. I think that there's an opportunity, and this is, you know, one of the things that I was sort of getting at is I think that, you know, in terms of redefining the personal computing interface, you know, for the future, that it's going to come out originally with these three, four main things that you're going to do and they all ship with it. But that long term, where you're going to be on this thing 5 years from now after third party developers get a crack at it is that, you know, who knows what type of apps they're going to come out with. But I think that the interface for it, you know, there's the potential on a big touch screen with, you know, powerful, you know, with a CPU that's powerful enough to deal with a bunch of fingers at a time and stuff to get, you know, this Minority Report style cool future user interface. Not to overuse a terrible, terrible word, but paradigm. I think it could be something very, very new.
I hope so.
All right, enough of that. I was trying to find something besides the I thing to talk
no,
about.
No, it is the sun. It is has the it is, highest it gravitational is. Pool yeah. in our attention
and
system.
And we are but moths to its flame.
Any other stories we want to cover before we get to our picks of the week? Anything else big in the Apple Mac universe? That's it.
That's it.
That's all we're going to be talking about through the 26th. Anything relevant to the Mac, John, you see at CES? Will there be any announcements? Apple's not going to be there, obviously.
Nothing that I'm aware of yet. I mean, I think it's more likely that there'd be maybe iPhone app announcements, but I don't know. Nothing yet.
There is a CES app, iPhone app, which is, they have the gall to charge it $1.99 for. but it gives you maps and you can put your schedule in there, and it's just, you know. I think Follow Me does this for other events as well, and that's who's doing
it. It's odd that they're charging for it. I was at WWDC last year, and Apple had a custom app that they gave to developers. They did not charge. I guess they charge enough just for the regular ticket to WWDC. But it really is a great – it was a fantastic way to do it.
It's good to have. Yeah, Macworld had one too. Yeah, it's really helpful. I have to point out that this normally January 26th event would normally be where Apple would announce new iPhones for shipping in June. Do you think they will also announce new iPhones?
I think they might. No. I don't think new hardware. I think maybe a new OS.
Yeah.
No, Snow Leopard Part 2?
No. New iPhone OS.
Oh, like 4.0.
Yeah, 4.0.
Like it could be a combination announcement of the tablet and the what the last 2 years has taken place in March, the new SDK features for iPhone OS next integer. Right.
One thing for sure, we're definitely going to see a whole bunch of new keynote features, because this is going to end with 10 minutes of chart gloating. In the past 2 years, from an operating system that never existed before, we have created an ecology like this. This was the first month. This is the first 6 months. This is the first 6 years.
Yeah.
By 2030, we will own 40% of anything with the letter R in it.
What about
all the new keynote features involve animations for growing, graphs that go growing up.
Good news, lads. We're getting a new feature to make the uppy lines go even uppier.
We've got a great thing. It's a chart. We call it Chart Buster. It actually, the line goes outside the screen. It's amazing.
Unfortunately, we cannot today create a chart that shows how much Microsoft and Google suck.
We've gone so far out of the box that we cannot see it anymore.
Only humans.
So Nokia is asking a U.S. court to bar imports of Apple's Macs, iPhones, and iPods. Yeah, it's just like that is. That's the giggle factor.
We're all screwed.
No, we'll never be able to get them anymore.
Yeah, Nokia's reaction to this thing really – I have my son turned 6 later this month. He's in kindergarten, and it really sort of seems like the way he argues with his friends, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Screw you!
I didn't want to go to your stupid birthday party anyway. How uncool you are that you got invited and I didn't.
Yeah.
Besides, money's not going to be worth anything if the economy collapses in 2 years. We're smart by not getting lots of money now. We're lowering our stock price. We can become private again. That's always been our goal, idiots.
You're not allowed on my spaceship.
No.
I'll be on Friendster.
Ladies and gentlemen, get your picks ready, because we're going to be doing those picks of the week in just a second. But first, my pick for a great place to go to get an audiobook, Audible, the only place as far as I'm concerned, audible.com/MacBreak. Go there right now. Sign up for the gold account, and you'll get your first book free. Yours to keep. You can cancel it anytime. This is your way of, for free, sampling what audiobooks can bring to your life. I listen to them all the time. I have it set so that it's when I get in the car, it starts playing. When I get out of the car, it stops. When I get to the gym, it starts playing. When I get off the treadmill, it stops. I mean, it's just, this is the soundtrack to my life now, are these great books.
I always look forward to like about 15-20 minute walk. It's just, I just get another little just section of the book.
And what great choices. I mean, 60,000 plus books now. Andy, do you want to do, you got something you want to talk about?
I got something that I haven't started reading yet, but boy, is it on the on-deck circle and just swinging three bats. Can't wait to read this. I was on Netflix watching the entire season of that Discovery show, Everest Beyond the Limit, the whole first season. It's a great show that covers the 2006 climbing season to summit Everest.
I love that stuff.
And it was such a fascinating series, because it wasn't a reality type show. It was more of a documentary show. And it just underscores how little you understand about the problems of scaling
Mount Everest. Yeah. That you're if you come up with ideas in your head of what the how you can die. Well, it's really really cold, so you might freeze to death. And boy, the oxygen's pretty thin up there, and I bet that you have trouble breathing. But those are things that you can appreciate because those are things that can happen to you at sea level. Those aren't things that there's an actual line on the side of the mountain that says when you are above this line in elevation, consider yourself on fire. That you are going to die. You are going to die in this state. The only there isn't a I'll take a special pill that let me survive being on fire. No, the only solution is to be below that line because your body starts to it takes so much energy. Because you can tell I've been reading a lot about this. I've been so interested by this documentary, reading stuff on the side. That it turns out that it takes so much energy to turn food into more energy that the body says, you know what, I'm gonna do something simpler. I'm gonna start to destroy my own tissues for energy because that's actually more economical to do. So you will die above this elevation. So as you can imagine, a whole bunch of different rules apply. Now the 2006 climbing season was very, very interesting because there was one very significant death. There's always several, but this one was particularly significant because a climber was simply left at the side of one of the lines, passed by multiple climbers on the way up and the way down, which caused huge controversies in the climbing community and in the non-climbing community of how can you simply walk past this guy who's alive and just not help him get down the mountain. And so the interviews you read with people who are professional climbers and people who are there on the mountains were saying, it's this is the correct analogy. It is like being inside a burning building. You know that there's someone alive in there, but you know that if you go up there to try to help them get them out, there'll be two bodies to deal with and not just one. That's not exactly that's not necessarily the correct answer. It's, as I said, it's very, very controversial. But this is why I've been very, very interested in, I've already purchased this book called Dark Summit, The True Story of Everest's Most Controversial Season by Nick Hale. It's a book all about this one climbing season that, according to the reviews I've read and according to the sample chapters that I've read, is a very, very good, very, very scholarly and very, very entertaining read about what that climbing season was like, what the experience of trying to summit Everest is like, and that it is a very, very complex issue. Among them is this climber who the controversy of the idea of hiring guides that will help you get up the mountain. This is also very, very controversial. People saying that, well, you're turning Everest into sort of an adventure holiday, maybe encouraging people who aren't qualified to get up that mountain right. to try to do it anyway. Then there's the other side that says, no, the reason why you hire a guy like Russell Bryce is because he will stay at base camp. He has infrastructure. He has weather charts. He has 20 years worth of experience. He hires the best Sherpas. He's not there to help you get up the mountain. He's there to help you get back to base camp alive. So it's exactly the sort of story that I like in nonfiction. It's a very, very complex issue. It's a world that I know nothing about. And just the first couple chapters left me thinking, I don't know. Maybe it was right to leave him behind. Maybe I have no idea. It will cause his new synapses to fire very, very entertainingly throughout your brain, I think.
You know, if you're going to read that, and it is, I'm going to put this on
also,
my list.
It's freaking cold here, so that's it's a very
it's a good time to read it.
Very, very good time to
or
read.
Or in the summer, you got to read one of the, I think, the best book ever written about summiting Everest, which is Into Thin Air, John Krakauer's story of another deadly season. The deadliest season, I think, until 2006. That was in 96, I think.
And you also have Into the Void. Which
Into the Void.
A movie,
yeah.
Which was an insane movie. But another
this,
good
this book, if you read Into Thin Air, you will not, don't start it until you have 7 hours and 47 minutes to kill because you will not stop. This is so dramatic. So I don't know if you've read that yet, Andy, but I would add that to the list too. I mean, once you start getting into Everest, This is another great one. So Dark Summit, The True Story of Everest's Most Controversial Season, Into Thin Air, the story, true story also of Everest's Most Deadly Season. And go ahead, add one.
You want No. Into the Void is another
Into
one.
Into the Void.
It's not about Everest, but it's about a crazy climb. But I just want to say that I was 20 years ago, I got off a lift at the top of Arapahoe Basin in Colorado and climbed to the top of that summit with my skis and decided I was never going to climb Everest ever.
Oh. Well, that's, if that stopped you, then I think you're probably right.
I
think you made the right choice.
This mountain is high.
Well, it was 14,000 feet. I mean, it's not.
What is Everest?
Oh, no, but I only had to climb, you know, 100 yards or 200 yards. And I was like, you know, this is
not for me.
It was big and snowy. And I just like.
Big and snowy. Yes, it is. Actually, Everest is big and unsnowy. It's just stormy and you need oxygen.
Yeah.
Dark Summit, the true story of Everest's most controversial season by Nick Heil, narrated by David Drummond. Our pick of the week. But, you know, Audible has 60,000 titles. So even if you'd like something a little more relaxing, like, oh, I don't know, Left for Dead, Seaborne Weathers story. Or High Stories of Survival from Everest and K2 by Matt Dickinson. Shattered Air by Bob Magic. You could read these and more. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. One of those is free.
And you wonder why I stay home and watch mountain climbing on television.
Yeah, no. This is not a good...
They've never written a book about the man who watched all season of the Discovery Channel and then was dead by the end of it.
John, I know you probably, we didn't warn you, but we'd like to do a pick of the week. And I know you probably have many, many things you pick. I even see on the front page of Daring Fireball an excellent pick. But do you want to pick something that you think is a great piece of hardware or software for Mac or iPhone owners?
Yeah, you know what I'm gonna say? It's not new, I don't think, but I'm going to pick Bento from FileMaker.
It's funny, I just downloaded version 3 yesterday. Yeah,
I've had my eye on it since 1.0. It's up to 3.0 on the Mac, and I have an iPhone companion, which is really what got me to look at it again. When I first looked at it, when it was 1.0, it struck me that it was like, it just took me back to the old days, like when FileMaker 1.0 came back in the early our mid-90s, whenever that was, when it was Claris. And, hey, you know, you can make a database by just dragging fields out and...
really easy,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, just easy, and it just makes sense, and it's, you know, a focus on a limited... It's very Apple-y, you know, FileMaker is an Apple subsidiary. And it just looked great, but I never used it. And it comes with a bunch of pre-made, what do they call them, templates. And they're neat, and they show you what you can do, but none of them really... The templates sort of threw me off at first when Bento 1.0 came out, because I didn't really need to use any of them. But then when the iPhone app came out, I thought, you know what? There's a couple of things that I use that I keep on my iPhone in Simple Note, or, you know, you could use any of the other little notepad apps, but that are a little bit more structured than just a text note, you know? Like one thing I've been doing is writing down every time I go out to eat, write down what I got and whether I thought it was any good, so that the next time I go to the restaurant, I can remember. Because you know, I'm just getting to the point where I don't really remember what I liked and what I didn't like.
That happens sooner, doesn't it? Than when would like.
and for little things like that, and you know, keeping track of the movies I've watched and the books I've read. There's just a little bit more structure is useful for that than just a text note. And Bento, I you know, it could not be simpler to set it up and make a simple little database with, you know, a couple of fields, and sync it between your Mac and your iPhone or your iPod Touch in a great interface. It's almost like it's a way on the iPhone to make your own little custom apps, you know, without any sort of, you know, programming whatsoever.
iPhone app work? Because I was about to download it last night and I started reading reviews and it seemed like people were having all sorts of problems with it.
It works great for me. I haven't run into a single problem. I'm not designing. I will say that I don't know. I mean, I made my little movies I've watched database and restaurants I've been to database. I made them on the Mac and then synced them to the iPhone. I don't know if, you know, how easy it is to actually... you know, specify the fields in the iPhone version. Although you can do it. I did tinker around with it a little and it was pretty cool. Yeah. But it just works and it's great. And it's really almost like, you know, like the equivalent of like a Visual Basic or something like that, you know, like a way to make little GUI apps, simple little GUI apps for yourself, just to scratch your own itch. And I just sort of blew me away at how simple it was. Compared to what the real FileMaker has grown to over the years, which is great, and there's, you know, conferences, and it's a developer tool. You know, Bento really kicks back to the origins of the personal database.
I did a lot of FileMakering in those days, and
I've done tons and tons of FileMakering, and I realized when I looked at the newest version of Bento was that most, like, 90% of what I do when I make a database in FileMaker, I can do in Bento. I don't need the full FileMaker. In fact, probably 99%. Yeah. It's really great.
I just can't emphasize how, you know, if you're familiar with the modern conventions of an Apple app, it really does feel like it's part of the iWork suite. I mean, it just visually fits right
and,
alongside.
And is it Apple scriptable? Does it have its own scripting like FileMaker?
You know, I don't know. I didn't.
You don't even need to script, really.
Yeah, even though, I mean, I love Apple Script and use it, but I, you know, for the little list of things, little structured list of things that I've been making with it, there was no need for scripting at all. You just drag out, you know, text field here, date field here.
I didn't realize how many third-party templates they've got online now. This is really remarkable. I mean,
it's like a wish that lets you ask for more wishes in terms of buying a single application. Yeah. A friend of mine just the other day, just 2 days ago, asked me, was looking for suggestions on, I want to, for my New Year's resolution, I want to do a daily journal, not a blog thing. I just want like a daily diary, was asking for recommendations for Mac apps. And I said, no, get Bento. Not only because there's multiple templates for a daily journal out there, but also because it allows you to put your own spin on it. If a month later you realize, gee, I drink a lot of coffee during the course of the day, I want to
have a coffee field.
Right, exactly. It'll take you about 10 seconds to add a field saying, here's how many cups of coffee I drank today. And then you can get the charts and you can get the graphs and then you can have data saying, yes, I am slowly killing myself with overconsumption. Good.
And I just can't emphasize that's really the angle that got me to switch from being, hey, that looks neat, to actually using it, was the difference. When I first looked at Bento a couple of years ago, it was just looking at the pre-made templates and, hey, they look neat. But it's the absolute brain-dead simple ease of either customizing one of those, if it's almost what you want, or just starting from scratch with a blank one and just throwing a couple of fields there and having a new, what are they call them, libraries. But it's really, really amazing product. So that's
$49, $50 for a new version. If you've got one or two, you can upgrade for $20 less. And I think it's $4.99 for the iPhone app.
It's great.
Yeah, the iPhone version is $5.
$5, yeah.
And definitely, in my opinion, definitely worth it and is a big part of it.
I'm going to buy it now. I was holding off because I just saw those reviews, but that's great. That's good news. Bento. It's from filemaker.com/bento. Mr. Alex Lidsey, a recommendation for you by Fred.
I got another iPhone recommendation.
Well, of course you do.
Yeah, you know.
You're an iPhone guy.
I like iPhones. I like wine.
Okay.
Don't we all? We're all in Sonoma County. I mean, how can you not?
Have to like wine.
It's like a requirement. Like when we went to rent our house, they said, we're going to rent your house, but do you like wine?
Because
we can't let you actually move to Petaluma if you don't like wine. So I like wine, but I don't know very much about it. You know, I like wine, and I kind of know how to swirl my little glass and stuff like that and look useful, but I don't know what I'm doing. And so I go into the only place I usually shop for wine is in BevMo. And for those of you who don't have BevMo, I'm sorry at first. BevMo is kind of like the Walmart of alcohol, you know, which is why I go there often because, you know, that's what I
Chef
like.
Boyardeau.
So anyway, but you can get anything and you can get it cheap, you know, and so, so you walk into the wine. The great thing about BevMo is that it has all the wine enthusiast ratings, you know, on it, and so I tend to go there. But it's a little far away. There's places that are closer to where I live that I could get wine, but I just don't know. I want to experiment. I want to play with wine, but I find that if it doesn't have at least a 90 in wine enthusiast, the chances of me liking it are much lower. It's much higher with 90 points or above. I just know that I'll just play with that wine, you know, and so. Wine Enthusiast has an app called Wine Guide.
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that. So now I can be in any, I can go to Raley's, I can go to the Petaluma Market, I can go to whatever.
And look.
And I can search by wine brand or producer, and it gives me what their rating is. Now I know that I shouldn't be just going by rating, but how else do you pick out a bunch of wines when you're walking into a random wine store and you want to try something new?
Well,
I don't want to
just open them up and sample them.
Well, I thought of that, and then they kicked me out of Petaluma Market and said I couldn't come back and have a salad.
I have to try before I buy. Don't you have a tester?
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, I should go to places and check it out, but I just, when I want a new bottle of wine, I want to be able to know what the rating is. I don't want to buy vinegar. So, so anyway, it's $4.99. It's super cheap, but if you buy wine, that's, you know, buying a bad bottle of wine is expensive. So, that's my pick of the week. It's the wine buying guide. I think that's what they call it. It's Wine Guide, and it's the Wine Enthusiast Wine Guide. There's another one that is actually pretty good, wine ratings. But the problem with it is that it doesn't. You know, you see what other people have rated it, but you don't really see what, you know, Wine Enthusiast. I mean, these guys get paid to do that.
No, that's a good. I trust Wine Enthusiast.
Yeah.
They're
so
good.
Anyway, that's my thing.
Wine Guide. How much?
$4.99.
Seems to be
or
the
two
new
bottles of nitrate.
And he does, in fact, know the price of Nitrane, which is kind of impressive. I'm going to do a quick pick, which is something that I've resisted. You know, I have an iFi. These are the little SD cards that have built-in Wi-Fi, and they're very cool. It's a really great idea, but it's been slow and low. 2 gigabytes, and it takes forever to get a, it's just not good SD. Well, today they've announced, and I'm going to order it right away, iFi Pro, which is X2 SD. Finally, they've got high-speed SD available.
Well, I have an iFi Pro. Is that
8 gigabytes? Yeah. This is new, brand new, just came out today. And 8 gigabytes, which is another big thing for me. It's just never had enough memory on it. And it's Class 6 read and write. So that is fast enough to keep up with something like the EP1 or the Lumix LX3. Unfortunately, I still like to shoot with a 5D, and that's compact flash. But if you have a card, a camera that uses SD cards, if you haven't played with the iFi, and I have to say, I was loath to recommend it, as cool as the technology was, just because it was so darn slow and so darn small, this is now what you need.
You've inspired me.
Yeah. This is great.
Because what I like to do is I'm going to hook it up to my – I didn't think of taking this to CES, but I think what I'll do is I'll take it to CES.
Because you have Wi-Fi there.
And I'll have – well, Wi-Fi, or I'll use my MiFi. So I'll have my iFi connected to my MiFi as a Wi-Fi. And then it'll...
Oh.
Third base.
Yeah. Abbott!
Yeah.
Hello.
I was doing that with my MiFi too. I have the Generation 2 card. And the first time I was sort of... you don't appreciate how bad even like a 2 megapixel camera phone is until the first time you pop an iFi card into like any sort of a pocket digital camera. I have the MiFi in my pocket, and I was taking pictures of my dinner at Zofdig's, and the results I was getting in terms of reactions to the food online were quite a bit more genetic in nature than they would have been if it was just simply my camera phone picture. Yeah. It is incredible technology. As a journalist, I really feel like Edison Carter. That I take a picture, it gets published. I take another picture, it gets published. Wow,
it's so cool. We have the old iFi here, and we use it for our house camera because it goes right on the Flickr as they take pictures, and that really is fun. Don't call it the Pro, call it the X2. The Pro X2 has been out for a while. It's the X2, 8 gigabytes, 6x read write speed. That is what they finally needed, and I look forward to getting one. I mean, this is weird, but it's an SD card with a Wi-Fi chip on it that you don't need any special extra anything. They say about $150, so it's pricey for 8 gigs, but I think that's finally something that I would recommend. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, Adnia.co has his pick of the week.
He did.
He did a book pick. That's why he gets a double pick. He gets two because he's a okay. Double picker.
Actually, this is one of those quick and simple little utilities. One of the features that I really liked out of Windows 7 was their snap feature for managing Windows, where if there are times when you want to have two windows side by side, so you can do a side by side comparison. In Windows 7, you just drag a window to the left or the right edge of the window of the screen. It will not only resize to half the size of the screen, but will also sort of lock to that side of the window. So it's very, very easy to set up that sort of thing. They also have a feature where if you drag the title bar of a window to the top edge, it immediately fills the entire parameters of the screen, not by some sort of weird resize algorithm. It will simply grow to expand to fit all dimensions of the screen. Cinch is a $7 utility from Irradiated Software that just adds that feature to Mac OS X. So it's a very, very handy way to manage lots and lots of windows, to manage automatically stack tile and grow and shrink windows. It's kind of in that category.
It's Aero Snap.
It's Aero Snap for Mac, and it's really, I don't need to make it any more complicated than that. It's a lot handier than you might even think it is, because once you sort of integrate that into your workflow, I don't like the behavior of the maximize button in Mac OS because
I don't either. Doesn't maximize.
Exactly. It'll fill the screen, but it will not fill all dimensions. And that's really what I want it to do.
Right.
So this is what Irradiated Software Cinch will do. They have a couple of freebies. It's a demo. It's your typical demo until you pay for it. They also have an app called 2Up, which is a free app that is good for automatically doing side-by-side window fills, but that removes the Aero Snap feature. It's something that Apple operates via a menulet, as opposed to just drag it someplace and this is what happens. But it'll give you an idea of the functionality of the app, and it's free forever.
But it's this. But Cinch is definitely worth $7. It was a very, very quick $7.
Yeah, this just solves my whole life problem because it's mostly Safari that just bugs the heck out of me. Somebody actually saw me doing it on live all the time. You know, I maximize Safari, then drag it and drag it and drag it. And somebody sent me a JavaScript that does it. But it only does it for Safari. This is great. I need this for
this. This should work with just about everything. It works via GUI scripting. So the only limitations are that if you have an application that does not use standard guidelines, then it won't work. So, for instance, Adobe Lightroom probably won't work. Photoshop Elements won't work. You know, all these other
Adobe products won't work. Yeah, right.
But
this
in general,
looks great.
Yeah, it's a nice app.
Just what I need. And $7.
$7.
$7, Andy Anatko. Thank you for your pick. Thank you all for being here. What fun. We're going to take off for Vegas tomorrow. I hope you'll watch our live coverage, even though there won't be much Mac stuff, at live.twit.tv. You can also go to twit.tv/CES. There's a podcast we'll be putting out content. We've already put out 3 shows or 4 shows, more content all the time. So you can download the content if you can't watch it live. You're going to be doing some stuff too, right?
We're going to be doing a bunch of shows for MacBreak and for This Week of Photography. So we're going to be doing, they'll be coming out over the next couple weeks.
Pixelcore.tv for that?
It'll be on Pixelcore.tv.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's crazy for us to do live and then almost instant downloads too.
Yeah.
We're bringing like 3 Mac Pros down. We're bringing editors. It's crazy.
There's like 2 of us going.
Yeah, this is nuts. This is nuts. You know, if I told you how much this was costing, you would gasp in pain. And disbelief.
Yeah, we're taking 2 people.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you're bringing freezer bags for all that shrimp. You'll be eating for 3 weeks.
Yeah, you better believe it. Chocolate Fountain are us. I told the staff, if you don't eat there, you're not eating. So please, stock up.
Not only that, if you don't come in with fewer than 8 pounds worth of recyclable food.
I think $12 per diem is not unreasonable. I'm sorry.
Free water at the Bellagio fountains.
Free water at the fountains. John Gruber is the man who writes the incredible Daring Fireball blog at daringfireball.net, although I just learned that .com works too. Wow.
Your choice.
Your for choice. Free. Yeah. Isn't that nice of you? John, have a great time staying warm and dry in Philly. Please come
Vegas.
Back. Yeah, it'll be fun. Please come back. We would love to have you on the show on a regular basis. You're just fantastic.
It was fun.
Thank you for joining us. DaringFireball.net, Alex's Pixelcore.tv, and Alex Lindsay is the same person. Andy Anatko, however, is not. And Andy is on the Chicago Sun-Times editorial board. Actually, are you on the editorial board?
Let's say I'm on the editorial board. That sounds really cool.
I just made that up.
I'm there taking journalism to the streets, taking it back.
Yeah, baby. All right, Andy.
Fight the fact that you can't fight yourself. I'm Andy Dodko for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Andy's blog is www.cwob. That stands for Celestial Waste of Bandwidth.com. You might check that out, too. And Andy, are you going to CES? I can't remember.
I'm not. I thought about it, but then I realized that this is the first. This is. I'm not joking. I actually had to count it up. This is the first time in my entire adult life when I've got like the week after Christmas. I do not have to prepare for a big trade show, and I'm going to screw it up to go to CES. No.
Well, that's my excuse for why I haven't been in 6 years. Is that I always had to get go to the Mac World.
That's why I felt like I had to go too. But I'm like, no. I was just thinking over the weekend. If this were any other year, I'd be spending this weekend packing for Mac World Expo.
Right.
Instead, I'm in my nightgown. I'm in my fuzzy robe. I'm in my little Scrooge cap, celebrating the hot toddy.
Isn't it weird? It is kind of weird because it's like it's gotten to the point where to me, Macworld is the punctuation mark at the end of the holiday season.
Right.
It's like you do Thanksgiving and then you do your shopping and then you got to do that real quick Christmas and all the relatives and New Year's, and then boom, you're going to Macworld. And it feels weird.
I know. I have to admit, I was noticing that. I was like, why do I feel so like there's just this huge gap this week? You know, and just this constant, like, whatever, because it's always so stressful. I mean, it's been last decade.
Why is my blood pressure 120 over 80?
So relaxed right now.
So my body got tensed up, and there's nothing to tense for. And so now I'm just like, oh.
Well, we're tensed for CES, and I'm going to tense again because we're doing Macworld Live. I'm taking over from David Pogue, who's going to do the big keynote at Macworld. So we'll be at Macworld.
So will I.
Yep. That's going to be fun.
In force.
You're doing something really cool. You're doing more at Macworld than we are, and we're doing more at CES than you are. So it's kind
exactly.
of even.
We're
it works
swapping
out.
Now,
we're swapping out. We're going to kind of do just the Macworld Live there.
I like the Macworld because Macworld is 3 blocks from my office.
Yeah, so. I know. It's the easy one to cover.
Yeah, if we're going to put a lot of people on it, we're going to do it there.
Welcome to Mr. Lindsay's neighborhood.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. You better get back to work because break time is over.